Welcome back to the Second and Two podcast. I'm your host, TB. I've got my co-host, producer extraordinaire, connoisseur of Christmas, crafter of the lenses, master of the grills, and my very good friend, Jody. What's up, Joe?
What's good, bro? We're back. I'm running late. That was all me. Sorry about that. But we're here. Following Thanksgiving, what was the best thing you had on Thanksgiving on your plate? What was that for you?
All right, so I got a quick little story, right? Quick little story. All right. So this year for Thanksgiving, last year I went with Jill to her family's house.
Yeah.
Right. To her family's Thanksgiving. You know, she's got mom, dad, little sisters, big sister, niece, nephew, brother-in-law, auntie, uncle, cousins, multiple cousins, other aunt, other uncle, grandma, nana. So we got, it's a decent sized Thanksgiving. You're talking like in the neighborhood of 20 people, right?
Okay.
And so this year, I say all that to give you the context, because this year Jill had to work on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So yeah. I pulled up to her family's Thanksgiving alone. Mm-hmm. Just me pulled up, right? Which is cool. Wasn't weird or anything like that. Like all those people I know, I've hung out with them. It wasn't like you're just going to come without Jill kind of, me to come. I was excited about it. So it was all good. But Jill was supposed to bring her famous green bean casserole. She makes it with like turkey bacon and onions and all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And she worked back to back Wednesday and Thursday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there wasn't really a window for her on Wednesday to make the casserole, except for when she got home. And the problem is she gets home so late and then has to go to work so early the next morning. She's pretty tired.
Yeah.
So I saw it coming and I said something and I was like, do you want me to make the green bean casserole? And she was like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It was like one of those, like, do I trust you like that? Like, I trust you to go to my family's house without me, but do I trust you to make the food that's on me? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel.
But I'm like, well, you know, I can do it. I can cook. Let me prove this to you. She's like, I don't know. So then she talks to me about it for about an hour on how I'm supposed to do it, how I'm supposed to make it. And I'm like, in the time that she talked to me, she probably could have just made it. But that's, step by step, bro. Step by step. And I'm like, all right, I got it. All right. So the next morning, so I get up because it's got to sit in the crock pot. It's made in the crock pot. So you got to, you got to give it time. So I had to get up super early Thanksgiving morning with her as she's getting ready for work. I'm making this stuff. And while I'm making it, she's like over my shoulder, like, are you doing it right? Are you doing it right? And eventually I just said, hey, Jill, you got to go to work. Like, go to work. I'll see you.
Yeah.
I got this, right? Now, I acted extremely confident in front of her. As soon as she left the house, though, I was like, whew, I hope I don't mess this up. So, there was a lot of pressure. You know what I mean? You got to not only am I coming to the Thanksgiving, but I got to bring something that 20 people are going to eat, and it better be good. You know what I mean? Turns out, I didn't tell anybody that I made it. Just let everybody think Jill made it.
Okay.
And everybody liked it, so it was good. So I sneakily got that done and didn't have to take any pats on the back or anything. Jill was happy, so that's all that really mattered. Now, they're out here, it's all about the deep frying of the turkeys, right? So I was a part of helping, the dudes who did that.
In the oil.
And bro, the first turkey it got messed up somehow. Somehow the bottom of the pan had holes in it.
Oh,
so it was leaking into the fire and burning the oil and going back up in, and it like contaminated the turkey. Yeah. And the first turkey was bad. Luckily, they had three of them.
Okay.
So we just got a whole new pan and cooked another turkey in that one, and that ended up being very good. So I highly recommend the deep frying of a turkey. However, don't use an aluminum pan or pot that might have holes in it. You got to really check those things. It was brand new. So it was a defect
video on
in the manufacturing.
Deep fry a turkey. It could have been. So the dude, he was talking about you got to get it up to temperature, 375. Cut the gas. Put the turkey in there slowly, and then check the temperature, and then get it back to 375. He said, "Because if you just keep it riding, you'll get holes in the thing." So they might have never cut the gas. I don't know. I've never deep fried a turkey myself. This is just this guy explaining on a video how to deep fry a turkey.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's what we did. I don't know. I don't know, man. I know it's 375 is where you got to keep it.
Yeah.
I know that. Yeah. So it turned out okay, though. Overall, great Thanksgiving meal. The turkey was one of the best turkeys I've ever had. It was lit. You know, the desserts, classic. You know, you got your pumpkin pie, your pecan pie. All of it was good. Great Thanksgiving overall. What about you?
Yeah, so we went out to dinner at a restaurant here in town for Thanksgiving dinner. So they gave us a plate of turkey, mac and cheese, mashed potatoes, Brussels sprouts, and like the cranberry sauce. There might have been one more thing on there. I don't remember. But it was all gravy was on there as well. And it was fire. Like the turkey, probably one of the best turkeys I've had in a minute. I'm normally like, turkey, man, like it's about to be dry. Like this one had like some juice on there and they covered in the gravy. So like, you know, you get a little bit of everything on that. And then the mac and cheese, I really liked the mac and cheese. It was just, for me, mine was like cold. So I was a little sad about that. So the main thing that I liked on there was the stuffing. That was like my favorite thing. And then probably the turkey following that. But yeah, no, it was fire. It was, you just sit down, you go, you pull up, and then they're like, oh, dessert. And then we're like, I don't know. And I was like, if anything, we just make something at home. Like, we ain't got to worry about buying it here. You know what I mean? But overall, good meal. Just travel out there. Nice and quiet in the town, too. Like, nobody was on the street to park, so we found parking right away. Hella chill.
Mm-hmm. Nice, bro. Well, before we get into some NFL news, we're recording Saturday morning before rivalry weekend in college football. And just so everyone has it clear, go Blue. You'll notice I'm featured wearing my Michigan beanie. I have my Michigan mug. I've got my Jordan Michigan jersey on. I'm head to toe go Blue today. All right. So it's beat Ohio. I won't say the things I want to say about Ohio. We'll just leave it at that. Hey, we're on a 3-game winning streak. We got to keep it rolling today. All right.
Keep it
rolling. Ryan Day, born on third base. Let's see what happens. All right. Okay. NFL news, baby. NFL news. Jody, what we got?
All right, first thing we got on here is our guy, Discount Double Check, Aaron Rodgers. Do you think he'll retire? Do you think he'll be a Jet when that happens, or is he going somewhere else in the following year?
See, there's been a lot of reports this week about, what's he doing after this year? Is he going to retire? Is he going to come back to the Jets? I think his contract's up. So, you know, he's technically a free agent, I think. Is that what it is?
I think so. He has a year, but he could just be like, you know what, I'm over it. You know what I mean? He hasn't done much.
I've read some reports like the Jets don't want him back, you know. So there was also that report about the owner, Woody Johnson, had said somewhere back in September that they should bench him. All of this, right?
Well, have you seen that?
But instead they fire the coach. They trade for Davante Adams. They fire the GM. Yeah, I mean, they've done everything to cater to him and hasn't worked out. So, I think the Jets probably go young at the position again, draft the dude, let Rodgers go. And he either retires or maybe there's another team. Now,
he's going to Minnesota.
The funny part about all of this, I was just going to say, the funny part about all of this is if he really wants to follow the Brett Favre arc, go to Minnesota, dude. Yeah. You know, I mean, I know they got Darnold, who's playing well, and They got JJ, and they just signed Daniel Jones. Of course, they don't need a quarterback, but, you know, if we're following the Brett Favre arc, go to Minnesota. You know what I mean? You Packers, trade to the Jets, free to go where you want, go to Minnesota. I don't know. I'm just saying. It's kind of crazy. Could happen.
It's possible. It's
possible. If I had a guess as to what he does, I mean, Vegas? Do you want to go be the quarterback in Vegas? They did his boy Devontae wrong, though.
That is true. They bring him back to Vegas?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You know what I mean? Maybe the Steelers. Maybe the Steelers are like, hey, Fields and Russ, they didn't get it done well enough. We need a dude.
Nah, I think if Rodgers, anywhere.
I don't know.
But he's got to want to go to one of the spots, though. I don't think he wants to go to the Birds.
Yes.
It, like, when you're
you don't think so?
Nah, he's definitely looking for a dome. Like, look at our guy Kirk Cousins, bro. Ever since he left Washington, I'm pretty sure he's been in a dome. Aaron Rodgers never been in a dome. He's only been in the cold. And
who's a dome team that needs a quarterback?
Minnesota.
Indy?
No. They're going to roll with Richardson after this year. They tried with Joe Flacco. Okay. They did a test run with Joe Flacko. He's not as good as he was last year.
The Raiders are a dome team.
That's a fact. The Rams? Not a dome team, but it's an open air dome.
They got Stafford. They got Stafford.
No, I know.
Who's younger than Rodgers?
It's just funny.
There are they are very interesting, though. See what he does.
Yeah.
I
think he goes somewhere else or retires before he does another year, though. That's my final word on that.
I also agree. I don't think he's ready to retire yet. The Cowboys, not a team for Rodgers, I don't think, anyway. are they going on a run? They've won two in a row. Now they beat the Commanders, who are a good football team, and the Giants, who are not a good football team on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some winnable games in front of them. Are they going to go on a run? Micah Parsons says they're going on a run after Thanksgiving as he's eating the turkey. He's fired up. The turkey might have done something to him, but he says they're going on a run. I don't know. Do you believe it, Jody? Cooper Rush taking them to the playoffs.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, he was their starter probably like 2 years ago for like five games. I'm pretty sure he lost only one of those games that he started. He was like 4-1 or something. Dak came back, and I don't think they were that good after for like a couple weeks. So
true,
it's possible.
Here's their remaining schedule. All right, they're 5-7. They get the Bengals at home. Tough game, winnable. Yeah. They go to Carolina. Tough game the way Carolina's playing recently, but certainly winnable. They get the Buccaneers at home. They go to Philly. Not a good one.
At least go 2-2 with that stretch so far.
And then they finish with the Commanders at home. I mean, they can't go 2-2. Nine losses, they're 5-7. You lose two games, you're best eight and nine, you ain't getting in.
No.
They gotta be at least 9-8. They can only lose one game the rest of the way. Truthfully, they probably have to go 6-0 or 2-4-5-5-0.
Yeah.
Games to me are toss ups. So is it possible? Yes. Will they do it? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. That's tough.
I think they finish 7-10 and they miss the playoffs. But that's just me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which is much better than what it looked like a couple weeks ago. A couple weeks ago, they're 3-7. Oh,
yeah, that's true. That's true. Is CD okay? Didn't he get hurt in the game on Thursday?
It seems like he's fine, and they kind of held him out because they were winning by a lot.
Precautionary?
Yeah.
Because if that's also a big thing, too. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. All right. What you got next?
We got the Dolphins can't beat the allegations. Yeah, they can't. Not winning in the cold. It all started on that first. They didn't even have the ball yet for one play, bro. They were just going to get the ball. They punted to him. Yeah. Dude whiffs the punt. Packers on the move. Their ball. Now they're on like the 20. They're never winning in the cold, bro. Anything under 50? I think they're like 1-16 or something. Wild.
Yeah, it's rough. They just don't run the ball well enough, and they don't play good enough defense. I mean, it's...
Bro, Tua couldn't
the Dolphins, any powers, I don't know. Though.
He was overthrowing people, throwing people behind him, like it was behind them, couldn't put in a spot for them to catch it. It was all bad.
Truly, truly bad. All right, Matt Eberflus. This is a tough day him. He was fired. Yep. Yesterday after their Thanksgiving time management fiasco. It's the first time in the history of the Chicago Bears, one of the NFL's longest standing franchises, that they have fired a coach midseason. You think about how many bad seasons they've had. They've never done this, and they finally did it. I saw some, I mean, there's some signs that the players are not fans of his. Jaquan Brisker said, everything happens for a reason. You know, one of those cryptic, I think it was a tweet or an Instagram deal. After he was fired. So it seemed like he was supportive of the firing.
Yeah.
Clearly the clock management at the end of that game on Thanksgiving played a factor. But also, just in general, they're 4-8. They've lost 6 games in a row. And you could argue they just as easily could have won all 6 of those games. Even if they just go 3-3 in those games, they would be 7-5 right now and in prime position to be a playoff team. They just, they've given too many games away at the end of games with poor clock management, poor decision making from the head coach. I hate to say that it's warranted because I never think anyone deserves to be fired. You know, it's just, it's a terrible place to be. There's a lot of
writing on the wall, though. Huh?
However, this is the NFL. It's a results-based business. You got to, you know, it's like they say in the NBA, it's a make or miss league. You miss too many times, you know, you're going to lose your job. So tough for Matt Eberflus. I was going to say Matt Nagy, but, you know, same deal for him.
Yeah.
I saw a joke on Twitter. Said that the Bears were eyeing a up-and-coming Chiefs OC who helped develop Patrick Mahomes to be their next head coach. He's had previous head coach experience and thought that was funny. Bears fans are like, no, please not Nat Nagy again. It will be interesting to see what they do. I mean, I think Thomas Brown, the man that they promoted to be the OC, the way Caleb and the offense have been playing recently, maybe, you know, he's going to get a shot here.
The interim?
Maybe he earns the job as the interim. Maybe he earns the long-term job. Wouldn't be happy or upset at that. I think he should get his shot, and we'll see what he does.
I don't know, man. I just know somewhere in the world, Big Cat is happy and sad all at the same time. Happy they got rid of him. Yeah, sad they can't win a game, though.
Yeah.
But speaking of people's records and how they're going to be missing the playoffs, the current one we're looking at right now for the AFC, we got the Chiefs in first, only lost one game so far. Bills at second, I think they've only lost two. With the Broncos being seventh, if they were to play, I guess that's where we're going with this, the matchups we'd have in the playoffs. Broncos, I think, are 6-5, if I'm not mistaken.
Believe so.
Steelers at third, leading their division. They've lost three games versus the Chargers, who are also
7-4.
I thought they had a bye week, so I was like, they're missing one game somewhere.
This man went bold. He said, "I'm gonna guess everyone's records without them being on."
I can't do it over here on the Texans one. I don't know the Texans. They're probably like 6-5.
I believe they were 7-5, and okay, they just came off their bye.
Yeah, okay. See, I knew they didn't have as many wins as I thought they would. And the Ravens, I think, have only lost three games, right? Three games for the Ravens that they've lost.
Eight and four, I think, are the Ravens.
Yes. Somewhere around there. That's how it plays out. 1 through 5 or 1 through 7.
Yeah. NFC side, you got the Lions as the bye. Eagles as the 2 seed would play the Commanders as the 7 seed.
They're like 6 losses.
The Commanders have five losses. The Seahawks are the 3 seed right now, and they would play the Packers as the 6 seed.
5 losses.
The Falcons are the 4 seed. They would play the 5-seeded Vikings right now.
Two losses? Three losses?
NFC North, possibly the best division in football right now. The Bears are a really tough 4-8 team. I mean, their record does not look good, but 4-8 doesn't tell the
season. They're the Bengals of the NFC.
Yeah, seriously, the Bengals and the Bears, man. Both those teams feel like they should be better than they are, but they are just not. We'll obviously keep an eye on that playoff picture as we keep going and start looking. You know, I think around week 15, we should start feeling like we kind of know a good majority of the field. Right now, the one team that's clinched a playoff spot is the Chiefs. The Lions, with their win on Thanksgiving, could get a little help this weekend, and they could also clinch. So the Lions and the Chiefs very close to being the first two teams that have actually clinched a playoff spot. The Chiefs officially have. The Lions need a couple teams to like lose or tie this weekend. Otherwise, if they win next week, they would clinch it officially. But feels like those two teams are our likely 1 seeds at this point.
Yeah,
it's not obviously locked up. Philly,
Packers have a chance too,
and
I think
the Bills. Yeah, Philly. The Packers have, and the Vikings all have chances, truthfully, in the NFC. And then in the AFC, like the Bills, the Steelers, and the Ravens also could have potentially kind of come back and get it. But it's likely right now the Chiefs and the Lions, with Philly and Buffalo having outside chances at getting it as well. Buffalo has a decent chance if they just need the Chiefs to win or lose one more game, and they just keep winning, and the Buffalo would end up with the 1 seed. So we'll see. But it's time.
Hold on, wait,
to get some awards in this week.
The Chiefs got to be the luckiest team of all time, bro. Ain't no way. They should have at least 2 more losses.
Truthfully, at this point, I'm just tired of hearing about how lucky they are. Everyone complains about them every week, and they just keep winning. And I'm just like, at some point, you're just good. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to like, oh, they get every call. Like, yeah, they get some calls, but dude, so do the Patriots when they were in their heyday. Sometimes you're just good and everyone wants to hate on you. So then things get magnified that like somehow people believe it only happens for them. And it's just not the case. I'm sorry. They're just better than the Raiders. The call didn't go the Raiders way, but the Chiefs are better. I don't know what you want. I'm not going to do this conversation. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing the like Chiefs NFL rigged.
I didn't say that. I just said they should have a couple more losses. The way the Bengals should have at least another win. The same way these dudes need to have another loss.
Maybe. I don't know. Say the same thing about the Vikings.
Yeah, see, I don't know much about their schedule, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm just saying. You could say the same thing about the Vikings. I mean, I'm just saying. Say the same thing about the 49ers, truly. 49ers giving away 3 games at the end of a game.
Yeah, but no, that's fact.
First up, we've got the Tukwa Gamer of the Week Award. For me, I'm going to Dallas, Washington. We're going to talk about that game a little bit later in the No Cap Hats Off Award. But Kevontae Turpin gets my Gamer of the Week for the muff kit kick turned into the B button, turned into turbo boosties, 99-yard kick return against the Commanders to essentially seal a victory for the Cowboys. If you haven't seen that play, just go watch it and you understand. Guy's a dog for me for that reason. He has three of the fastest recorded miles per hour in a game this year. He's unreal. And the spin move into the boosties was crazy. It looked like some Madden type stuff. So, Kevontae Turpin, Gamer of the Week.
For sure. My gamer of the week kind of aided my reasoning to leave the game. I went with Saquon Barkley, 26 carries, 255 yards, 2 touchdowns, 4 catches, 47 yards. Literally in the second half, I was on a
couldn't stop.
Base by base series. I was like, if they don't score, if the Rams don't score on this next drive, like, I'm leaving. I was like, they're about to just lose the bag bad, you know what I mean? So I think I left with like 3 minutes left in the third. I was like, I can't watch this. This is over. Then I get back to the whip, and it's like Saquon just went nutty, and I was like, oh, of course, he was heating up when we were there, and now he just kept piling on. So yeah, Saquon, that's my gamer of the week.
It was tough. I don't want to talk about that game very much. Let's go to your dog of the week.
Okay, this one, not traditional dog of the week. I know there's plenty of teams that got two people in the same house, but I don't know if I ever paid attention to if there was one.
It's really just LA and New York.
True. And occasionally when the Giants and the Jets and then the Rams.
Yeah, the Rams and the Chargers and the Giants and the Jets are the only teams that share stadium.
But like, yeah, put this in perspective, right? So the Clippers and the Lakers used to do this. Same day for whatever reason, but I feel like
not anymore.
That's a lot more manageable compared to a football stadium where you got like 60,000 plus. You know what I mean? You got people leaving their trash at the seat. You got to tear down the field. Got to fix up the whole shop, which there's like several around the whole building. You know what I mean? Not just one big one.
Yeah.
They had a Sunday night game, like I said, the Rams-Eagles. And then they had the Monday night game, the Harbaugh Bowl. And so now I don't know how often this happens. Never pay attention to New York like that if they do it. I know people done it Thursday to Sunday. You know, you get yourself a couple days. But they had less than 24 hours before the next game started. You know what I mean, game ends around like 8:30. They got from 8:30 till like 3 p.m. the next day because, you know, people are allowed in 2 hours before the game. So the SoFi Stadium staff, they're getting my dog of the week for having to do the whole build up and tear down within, you know, amount of time. Dog of the week. Staff.
I like it. That is impressive. And shout out to them because they don't probably get very many shout outs. And that is a tough job. All right, I've got the minor setback for a major comeback here. The Commanders lost their third game in a row against the Cowboys on Sunday. I do expect them to bounce back against the Titans this coming Sunday, get back to their winning ways. They've been a very good football team this year. They still feel like a playoff team to me, despite the recent losing streak. I think Jaden Daniels gets back on track. I like Cliff Kingsbury. I like Dan Quinn. I like Bobby Wagner on that defense. Daniels, again, been a bit of a slump. Think he'll come back. He'll be okay. And I think they get back to winning and get themselves to 8-5 this weekend.
Mm. Yeah, you know what's something funny? So PFT, they were talking about it on PMT last week. He was like, hey, man, we started 7-2. And then they're like, yeah, but if we told you lost the three after that to be 7-5, how would you feel? And he was like, we don't talk about that.
You know what, though? If you ask Commanders fans before the season, hey, going into week 13, you'd be 7-5. How do you feel? I'm sure they'd all take it.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm pretty sure that's what they said too, but it was like, they started off so hot, and he's like, man, we've lost the last three, but we don't want to talk about those.
that's what you stay positive over there. I like it. Next up, we got the no cap hats off, and this is a unique award this week.
A lot going on.
I'm just going to take you through a lot going on, and I was enjoying watching every second. All right, so. You know, Red Zone, they've got the witching hour.
Yeah.
Which is that last hour between the early window and the late window where, you know, wins become losses and losses become wins, as he says on Red Zone.
Good old Hanson.
It provided us with a 15-minute period that included the Bears and Vikings and the Cowboys Commanders going just completely drunk. All right. So I'm just gonna read the timestamps to you because this is how it happened in real time as I was watching it. All right, so there's 7 minutes and 22 seconds left in Chicago. The Bears score a touchdown, but they don't get the 2-point. They're down 24-16 to the Vikings. Mm-hmm. Now you flip over. 5 minutes and 16 seconds left in Washington. The Cowboys score a touchdown to put themselves up 20-9. So both those games, you're kind of thinking like, it's going to be tough for the home team to come back and win here. All right. Flip keeps going. 3 minutes and 2 seconds left in the Washington game. Commanders score, and they get the 2-point to put themselves down 20-17. Like I said, 3 minutes to go. They've got their timeouts. They're in this thing. Okay, now you flip back over. 1:56 left in Chicago. The Vikings kick what appears to be a game-sealing field goal. We're going to break down the third down that led to that later. But so that puts the Vikings up 27-16. Again, thinking Chicago is probably out of it at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You flip back over. Washington, 2 minutes and 49 seconds left. The Cowboys return a kickoff for what appears to be game over, game-sealing touchdown, Kevontae Turpin, dog of the week, 27-17 Cowboys. But then 1:40 left in Washington, the Commanders kind of matriculate down the field. Boom, 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 boom. They don't use their timeouts. They kick a field goal, keep a game alive. They have two timeouts left. 27-20 Cowboys. Okay, now we're 22 seconds left in Chicago. The Bears score a garbage time, you know, what normally we would think of as a garbage time touchdown, and they get the 2-point conversion, which keeps themselves theoretically alive pending the onside kick. We know no one has success with onside kicks these days. They're like a 0.01% chance of happening.
Yeah.
27-24 Vikings. But don't go anywhere. Stay right there, because with 21 seconds left in Chicago, guess what happens? The Bears get the onside kick. They're the 0.01%, and they get it. Oh, 21 seconds left in Washington. Flip over. Commanders get the ball back. Score a miracle touchdown to Terry McLaurin to tie the game, except their kicker misses the extra point. How? 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 27-26 Cowboys. Okay. 0 seconds. Cut back to Chicago. Caleb Williams has thrown a dart down the field. They've gotten the spike. The Bears clock it. 27-yard strike by Williams. They kick a game-tying field goal as time expires. And I'm not kidding. Before they lined up to kick the field goal, I said, it would be hilarious if the Bears bear right now. They did not, though. They tied it. 27-27. We're going to overtime in Chicago. Flip back. 14 seconds left in Washington. The Commanders try an onside kick, which we said, 0.001% chance of getting it, right? They don't get it. However, the Cowboys actually return it for a touchdown, which in theory, with 14 seconds left, it's a one-possession game still. It keeps the Commanders in it, 34-26 Dallas.
Yeah.
Okay? Stay there. 0 seconds left in Washington. Jaden Daniels throws the Hail Mary, but he throws a pick. It officially ends the game, 34-26 Dallas. But golly, Washington is sitting there kicking themselves because they really should have forced overtime. Okay, overtime in Chicago. The Bears get the ball. They take a sack on second down, false start on third down, put themselves in a long third down. Tough play for Caleb Williams. They end up punting. 2:10 left in Chicago, cut to the Vikings kicking a game-winning field goal, 30-27. This all happens within about 15 minutes of real time. Insanity, and it's why we love the NFL, because any given Sunday, right, good stuff can happen. So that was the No Cap Hats Off Award of the Week. It goes to the Bears and the Vikings and the Cowboys and Commanders for just giving us wonderful, glorious football.
Yeah, I remember I was on the Metro going to the game, and I pulled out my phone. I was like, let's see what's going on with the games, because I haven't caught much. My phone was like dying all day. I just got it charged up. And so I pull it out. First thing I see was the Bears, right? What was the...
Uh-huh.
It went from the Bears scoring to like tie it up, I think, to them missing the field goal, the extra point. And I was like, this is crazy. And then we had to hop off the Metro, and I was like, all right, we'll see what happens now. But I was like, dang, these dudes just lost the game off that field goal. Didn't know there was still more time remaining that they worked with on that. But yeah, just a wild scheme of events for
Craziness.
All right, next up, we got the Strahan Munoz Big Fella Award. I'll go first on this one. I took Mekhi Becton. I guess I kind of just rode the wave of the Eagles game and took him. He's the right guard on Philly, number 77. Also, news to me, was a former tackle. Makes sense why he's 77 compared to our other homie who was center. But, yeah, just I don't need to say more. Saquon ran for 255 yards alone. You know, he's been doing it all year, putting up big numbers. They said he got a chance to take over the rushing yards for a season. So, I mean, it all starts up front with his big boys, and they've been putting in that work for sure.
I mean, Mekhi Becton, shout out to him. He's, like, revitalized his career in Philly, going from tackle in New York to guard in Philly, and he started all but one game. Good season for him. We're going to stay in Philly, all right? This is a really special Strahan part of the award this week. It goes to Brandon Graham. Much like Aiden Hutchinson, he goes out this season with the Big Fellow Award. I gave it to Aiden Hutchinson earlier in the season when he – you know, we realized he was going to be done for the year with his injury. Similar in that both these dudes come from Michigan as edge rushers. Mm. Brandon Graham, though, tore his triceps during Sunday night's game against the Rams. He, before the season, said this would be his last year. He made plans to retire after the season. So if that's a career, then it's been an incredible one. You're talking 15 years as an edge rusher. That's like playing 25 years as a quarterback, truthfully, nowadays. It's honestly... It's up there to me with what you know, with what Tom Brady did and how long he was able to play and how long he was able to sustain it. Yeah. So, you know, I think we got to respect that. And then you put up the numbers: Super Bowl champion, second team All Pro, 2-time Pro Bowler, 76.5 career sacks. On Sunday, he had 2 tackles, 1 sack, 2 TFLs, 1 pass breakup, 3 quarterback hits. He went out on his sword. Dude was unreal and put a ton of pressure on Stafford all night. That Philly D did. I think they had 5 sacks total, and Brandon Graham was a big part of that. So if this is it, this is all we see from him for the rest of his career. Salute to the big fella because he's a dog, no question.
Yeah, facts. I remember seeing his jersey. I was like, who's that guy? And then they were talking about him pregame. I was like, oh, I know who this guy is. You know what I mean? Well, I just saw Graham. Yeah. I was like, who's Graham? Like, that was so confusing when I seen the jersey walking around the lot. Yeah, no. Salute to the man for a long career, especially in the trenches. It's weighing on the body alone, let alone having to deal with all those dudes every day. Tough.
Yep.
Tough, man.
We got the Who's Cooking Award, right? Given to the quarterback who is cooking. Might be a 5-star steak, right? But might be a Lunchable special, right? this week, mine's going to Caleb Williams. He was cooking despite the loss. Went 32 of 47, 340 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks against the Vikings. He also didn't play bad against the Lions in the second half, played pretty well. Made some mistakes, critical errors at the end of that game. But in the Vikings game, his effort was heroic to even force overtime. Only real mistake in the game was holding the ball too long in 2nd and 9, taking the sack. But I could have said that against the Lions too, taking that sack to force them into that spot. I mean, that's his biggest problem right now. He needs to learn when to extend the play and when he probably needs to give up on it and throw it away. Because he's taking too many sacks right now. That's his biggest problem. If you ask me, biggest problem is holding on the ball, taking too many sacks. He's incredible, though, and I think he'll continue to get better. It's a lot of the analysis we had in the pre-draft stuff. The talent is just unreal, and when he's on time and then you add the extension of plays, like he made some throws against both the Vikings and the Lions that were just, like, incredible. And if you're going to get the good, you got to live with some bad. It's just that there's probably in critical situations, he needs to be a little bit smarter and avoid taking those sacks. But he's playing really well. I think it's going unnoticed because they're on a 6-game losing streak, but he is playing well. So if you're a Bears fan, there is hope.
True. And I believe he's taken less sacks since they got the new OC, or they fired their dude, whatever happened.
They've just been in scenario, like really bad moments, though.
Yeah.
Like, truthfully, both the sacks he's taken in the Vikings and the Lions game, you could argue both those sacks taking those like lost them the game. Like bad sacks, bad moments.
No, I feel you. For my Who's Cooking award, I kind of had to toot my own horn on this one. So I talked about last week where I said Tommy DeVito, he's not getting over 200 yards, which was a true statement, passing yards. And so let's see what I have written down. He did so bad, bro. Our guy, Drew Lock, you know what I mean? Young Jeezy over there got the start this week in Dallas. So they were like, we thought we had a chance with Tommy D. Now we got a flipped
Tommy script. Tommy D was hurt, though.
Oh.
He wasn't even active for Thursday on Thanksgiving. But
well, that's on me. But for my narrative I'm writing right now, he did so poorly, they ditched him.
Got to write the narrative. Yeah, got to write the narrative.
He finished 21 of 31, 189 yards, 7 rushes, 32 yards. And as I mentioned at the top, I also called the under 200 passing yards. But we'll see that one again later. We'll see how I did myself dirty.
Okay. Right. Last award for the week. Boo Boo Evans Award. Who you got, Jody?
Monday night. We just need a catch, man. Oof. Anything Oof. For us, for the squad. He's back. Quentin Johnston, man. Went 0-for-5 on the day. Plenty of catchable balls thrown his way. A big one. I don't remember what exactly happened. It might have been the play where he's running across the middle, hit him in the hands, and he just let it fall straight down. My man had 5 different changes to make an impact and couldn't do anything with them. Tough day.
Oh, man. Well,
I seen to put some more salt in the wound.
Good week of awards.
There's a dude playing him Monday night. He was up like a point in fantasy. He was like, I need Quentin Johnston to go 0 points this week. And that's exactly what happened. Kind of crazy.
Oh, that's brutal. Okay. This is a good week of awards. It's time. It's time, Jody. We haven't done it all year. And it's time to bring back TB's QB tiers. And we're back with the quarterback tiers. Quarterbacks as actors. All right. I've never seen anybody else rank quarterbacks this way. So we're going to toot our own horn and bring it back. All right. And Jody, I don't know, Jody, did you know that? Did you see this was coming back this week?
Did I
give you the fair warning?
You did, but I didn't know there was an added list on this one. A whole new section.
Yeah. Quarterbacks as actors. Yeah, the quarterbacks as actors. We've done this. We've done this bit for a couple years now, but we continue to bring it back because it is successful. It's one of my favorite segments. All right. We're 12 weeks into the season. Well, 12 and a half because we've seen like 4 week 13 games. But this ranking, remember, is based on a little bit of pedigree, a lot of what they've done this year, a little bit of projection of what we might see into the future. We've got 6 tiers. It includes anyone who has started at least 3 NFL games this year as a quarterback. All right.
Okay.
So anybody who started at least 3 games is in the list, is ranked. There may be some dudes who get added by the end of the year, i.e. Drew Lock, Tommy DeVito, guys like that who are just now getting some starts under their belt. But like Aiden O'Connell might make this now. I think he just made his 3rd start on Black Friday, maybe something like that. So, yeah, we'll add guys as we do this at the end of the year. But we had to check in. Hadn't had time to do it yet this year. So this is our first one of the 2024 season. But without further ado, we'll get rolling. Okay, we're going to start with the A++ DiCaprio tier. If this guy's starring in your movie, you're thinking Oscar. You're thinking incredible. You're thinking a hit, all right? You're thinking Super Bowl. Okay, number one, guy is my MVP right now. He's elevated the entirety of his team. He's taken out some of the bad plays. Josh Allen.
A lot of the bad plays.
Been incredible this year.
Proving me
he's
wrong.
He's been incredible. He's been unreal. He's made all of his receivers look good. They've done it without much of a like the running game that they developed late last year hasn't been as good this year. But it hasn't mattered because Josh Allen has been incredible, and that's why he's number one on the list right now. He's at the top of the DiCaprio tier. He would be my MVP. Number two, Lamar Jackson has also been incredible. At moments, you could argue he's been the MVP. Had a couple bloopers, couple stinkers this year, but truthfully, he's been very good. Teams have to game plan for him differently. And truthfully, all three of the guys in this tier, you have to play against them and game plan for them differently. Number three, that's Patrick Mahomes. Has he been an MVP this year? Maybe not. Maybe not from a numbers perspective. The offense hasn't been as good as it normally is. However, he wins games.
The same argument I had earlier is still valid here. He's only lost one.
So those are the three in the A++ DiCaprio tier, the untouchable, unassailable, like three dudes in the league right now. It's me, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. Those are the dudes. Okay. In the next tier, we have the elite Matt Damon tier. All right. This means like they are an A-list actor. That's your franchise quarterback. You're not looking like you feel good if you have this guy at quarterback. You're not like looking for other options. If he's getting paid 50 plus million, you're not feeling bad about it because you feel like your team, he gives your team a chance to win a Super Bowl year in and year out, as long as you do the right stuff around him. All right. First up, Justin Herbert. I knew getting Harbaugh would be great for him, and it has been. As the year's gone on, they've thrown the ball a little more. They established the run early in the year, and they've started to do some more things with Herbert throwing the ball. It's probably the best quarterback that Herbert and Harbaugh and Greg Roman have had in the NFL when you consider their other NFL quarterbacks. I know Greg Roman did get to coach Lamar Jackson, but I mean the Harbaugh-Roman tandem. You think back to San Francisco, it was Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick. Justin Herbert as a passer is miles above both those guys, even though both of those guys were pretty good under Harbaugh and Roman. And he's looking like it right now. If the Chargers were just a little bit better, you might be able to call Herbert a dark horse MVP candidate. He's not quite that. Number five and number two in the tier, Jalen Hurts. You saw it against the Rams on Sunday Night Football. Every time they need him to make a play, he does. The cool thing about the Eagles is they don't need him to make plays all the time. They have so many playmakers, Saquon in the run game, A.J. Brown in the passing game. Like Jalen Hurts doesn't have to do that stuff all the time, but when he does have to do it, he's doing it very, very well. It's impressive, and this part of the reason why the Eagles are so impressive, he looks a lot more like the Hurts we saw 2 years ago that got them to the Super Bowl. Number three in the tier, Matthew Stafford. The only reason the Rams are 5-6 with all the shuffling of the O-line and Coop and Puka hurt and in and out of the lineup and Kyron Williams fumbling and all that, the only reason the Rams function on offense for most of the year is because of this guy. It's gone largely unnoticed. I don't think people are talking about him this way, but truthfully, they haven't had their actual starting offensive line all season. That whole starting five is actually going to make their first start all together, it appears, this weekend against the Saints. Kyron Williams has been good, not great, has fumbled a ton. Obviously, he missed Puka and Cooper Kupp for quite a bit of the season, and yet he's still finding ways to get it done. Still has the Rams in a spot where they could win the division if they do things right down the stretch. So Stafford is a dude. Next, Joe Burrow. I could make a very similar argument for Joe Burrow and the Bengals. T. Higgins in and out. Jamar Chase with the holdout and wasn't great to start the year. Okay, he's come on and he's been his normal self. They had a revolving door at running back until they figured out, okay, Chase Brown is the dude. Offensive line has been kind of up and down. Joe Burrow's coming off the wrist surgery. Everyone's been concerned about it. Their defense hasn't played great all season. And yet, you know, he has them in a lot of games. They just haven't been able to win. But, I mean, two of his losses are to, you know, like Lamar Jackson. And
yeah.
So
where the score was like,
I can't say
46.
Well, and you look at it and you're like, okay, who's he lost to? Well, he's lost twice to Lamar. He's lost to Hurts. He's lost to Herbert. Gross. He's only really losing to dudes above him on this list. So Burrow has been incredible though. And I still believe in him, and the Bengals will always have a chance to be an elite team with him as their quarterback. And then last in the elite tier, Jared Goff. Jared Goff is the dark horse MVP outside of Allen and Jackson, truthfully, because the Lions are so good. And part of it is because he operates that offense on another level right now. Their O-line deserves a ton of credit for the time they give him. And we've seen historically, if you give Goff a real pocket and time to throw, he'll dice you up, and he has been. So credit to Goff for that. And he's in this elite tier with the way he's playing right now. He's only had one real bad game against the Texans this year where he threw five picks, but a couple of those are also kind of not on him. So really wasn't as bad as the five picks may make it sound. All right, let's go to the Paradox Sandler tier. Adam Sandler, right? Really, really good movies, but also some really bad stinkers. These quarterbacks, I think you could say, are dudes who, for the most part, you trust. You don't feel like you're looking for another quarterback. If you have these guys, you probably feel good, but you just wish you'd get more of the good more often, essentially, right?
Yeah.
They come with some baggage, come with a little bit of bad here. So first up in this tier, CJ Stroud. Incredible as a rookie. Thought he was going to ascend to a top five guy this year. Hasn't quite been that. They've lost some really strange games that it feels like, man, if CJ could have just made one throw here or there. They've also been very banged up. It's just been a weird year if you're a Texans fan. Their defense is elite. Still feels like they have a chance to figure some stuff out, but you probably need a little bit better or closer to rookie year CJ as opposed to maybe what you've gotten this year. He's still very good. I still have him ranked right now as the ninth best quarterback in the NFL if you're going by these tiers. So I'm still saying he's a top 10 guy. However, we were kind of hoping for top five type stuff from him this year. Okay, next up, Kyler Murray has ascended since, you know, the injury and all the stuff that's happened. He has the Cardinals in position to win the NFC West if he does things the right way. Had a pretty tough game in Seattle recently. Still makes some boneheaded decisions. Every so often he does. But his talent is undeniable. He extends plays like, you know, as with the best of them. You do feel good if he's your quarterback, I would say. Next up, Geno Smith. In his starts in Seattle, he's proven that he is a legitimate quarterback in this league and you can win with him. He's raised the ceiling of that Seahawks team. We talked about him as our cooking award winner a couple weeks ago when he went on the road and beat San Francisco with that 2-minute drill. He's capable of that all the time. Next up, Jordan Love. Jordan Love's been really good. He hasn't been great yet this year, though. Just been really, really good. In fairness, I don't know if the Packers have asked for greatness from him quite yet. He had the injuries early in the season, the MCL and all that stuff. I think he's finally truly healthy, and we'll see down the home stretch of the season if he can ascend to that next tier, because if he does, we saw what happens with that Packers team last year in the playoffs. They become super dangerous. Next up, Brock Purdy. 49ers, tough year. Really tough year. A lot of injuries, a lot of weird stuff happening. They've given up some games. We saw what that Niners team looked like without him. It's clear he brings added value. His ability to extend plays with his legs is underrated. His command of that offense is underrated. I do think at this point he's probably a little bit of an underrated quarterback in some circles. In other circles, maybe overrated. He's one of the most polarizing guys, I think, in the league. And it's fitting that he fits kind of right in the middle here. What is he ranked on my list? 1, 2, 3, 14. Yeah, 14. That's, I mean, perfectly in the middle, right? After him, I've got Baker Mayfield. I just love watching Baker Mayfield play. You know what I mean? He's just an easy guy to root for. Yeah,
week in, week out. He's got last week he had a nice block down the flag.
Yeah, I think he's a good teammate. I think he'd be fun to play with. So Baker Mayfield, is he elite? No, he's not elite, but he's a guy that I feel like the Bucs feel good about that contract right now. They're not regretting it by any means.
True.
And then the last guy in this tier is Aaron Rodgers. And it's more based upon pedigree than anything else at this point. He hasn't played great in New York. They haven't won a ton. But I also don't think all of it is on him. I think if in the right situation, he could still elevate you to, and maybe that's, I'm just believing the talent at this point. But to me, it still feels like if you gave him the right stuff, it's like Brett Favre. He was not good with the Jets, but then he went to that Vikings team at the end of his career who were just a quarterback away and truly elevated his game, and they got him to the NFC Championship, even at whatever he was, 44 or whatever. And I think Rodgers is in that same boat. I think that's still there. Okay, that rounds out the top 16. It's the top half of the league. I think there's 16 teams that, and we talked about Rodgers at the top today. The Jets may not feel good about it, but I think that's 16 teams. And if you have that quarterback, you should not be looking, truthfully. Okay, the next set of dudes below, you could be looking, right? It could be. Yeah. We'll see. See what this team wants to do. We start in tier four, the cryptic cage tier. All right, Nick Cage. Still, peak Nick Cage movies are good, but a lot more like not so peak moments. All right. So, Sam Darnold started the year and looked like an MVP. First five games of the year, really did. Cooled off quite a bit, makes some bad decisions. However, I still really like the talent, and I want to believe in this dude as a long-term option for somebody. I think he's close to jumping into that next tier above, but we just need to see more consistency and maybe throughout the course of the rest of the season. But I like Darnold and the way he's played in Minnesota with O'Connell this year. He's earned, I think, the ability to be somebody's starter next year if it's not in Minnesota. Tua Tagovailoa, he's been great since he came back from the injury. It's just the injury scares you, obviously, and that has to play a factor. And you know, in the cold, not so good. Okay, next we've got Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, and they're put right next to each other for a reason. I don't know who gives the Steelers a higher ceiling. It's kind of a weird deal. They're similar and different in so many ways. It's an interesting conundrum that they have themselves in. And but they've played well enough. It's not like they've been bad. They've played well enough that team is what, 8-3, I think. But they, at their best day, I think they can beat anybody. On their worst day, though, I think they could also lose to anybody.
To the Jets.
And it really depends on the play they get from those guys at quarterback.
Next up, Bryce Young, before you go on. I just want to make a quick observation for the people who are listening. Our guy, Russ Wilson, is the only man on this list wearing eye black, which is hilarious.
Wearing eye black?
Yes.
For the picture. It's classic Russell Wilson. It's so classic.
He's dangerous.
All right, next up. I've got Bryce Young. He's been playing so much better recently. Since he got benched and came back, there's hope there, I think. I think if you're a Panthers fan, there's enough hope that I'd want to see him as a starter going in next year. And obviously, you've got a few more games this year. See how he finishes, but I feel good about that. All right. Whew. Next up, Derek Carr. I don't know. It might be the end of Derek Carr's career, but he's had some good moments. It's about as much as I can say at this point. Anthony Richardson is last in this tier. He's real close to being a B-lister, but he's not quite there. I don't know. He's still too young for me to give up on him right now. Okay. The young Holland tier, as in Tom Holland, these guys, they have a career that could still kind of go anyway. It's really reserved for the rookie quarterbacks. And we have the 6 first rounders, plus our guy that Chase nicknamed the trash can, who started enough games to kind of qualify. He's last in the young Holland tier. Well, spoiler alert, didn't look great in his games. Maybe he is a trash can, as Chase would like to say. but maybe not. There's still time. So we'll rank him as we see him right now. I've got Jaden Daniels, then Caleb Williams, then Bo Nix, then Drake May, and then J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix haven't played enough for us to see him, so they're just kind of there. But the four who have played all look like they could be potentially franchise quarterbacks. They could all make the jump into the Paradox Sandler tier at the very worst, maybe even the Elite Damon tier. And the A++ DiCaprio tier, we don't wish on anybody in terms of, and until they're there, you don't say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But those dudes are all really good quarterbacks that have played, and I think they can all at worst be in that third tier of guys.
Hey, all quick question.
We get to the B-listers.
Before you start, do you know who Jack Doherty is?
Well, I know the name. He's like some streamer dude
who always gets in fights with people, but then just puts in his bodyguards.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to just put it out there. J.J. McCarthy looks just like that fool in this picture. But you just got to look it up later. And let me know what you think, because that's wild that he's on there. It literally looks like we just like spoofed it and was like, here's this guy.
Okay. All right. Into the B list tier, the Leto tier. All right. Your movie's much better if they are supporting actors, as in not your starting quarterback. Okay, we'll go run down the list quickly. Daniel Jones, obviously. Joe Flacco, maybe for a couple games, not much more than that. I don't think him as your starter. Andy Dalton, similar deal to Joe Flacco. Will Levis, I'm ready to give up on him. Ooh, I said the opposite agree? About Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson. I saw enough from those guys. Will Levis is just, he plays too careless for me. I can't do it. Jameis Winston, lovable. Wouldn't mind having to ride a season out with him, you know, when your starter goes down. I don't think he's your long-term answer. Snoop Huntley from the Dolphins was okay. Not great. Mac Jones. Oof. Battle. Cooper Rush. Oof. Okay. All those dudes, they're better for your backup quarterbacks. And then you've got the Jeremy Renner. This is a shout out to him last year when he got in the accident. He's come back. He's okay. But it's the injured tier. We've got Dak Prescott, Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, and Gardner Minshew, starters who got injured and couldn't really be ranked. All right. Mm-hmm. That's how we finished. Jody, any qualms with the list here? Any guys who you felt like should have been in a different tier?
At this moment, I would say Jalen Hurts. Probably put him up one. We see he's able to do it. You know what I mean? It's been some time since he's done it, but he's been balling this year. And I would say maybe Tua, Sam Darnold, and Aaron Rodgers. We would bring down our guy Rodgers and put them two up. They're balling a little bit. Especially, like you said, Tua's been good since his return. Obviously, they lost Thursday. But besides that, he's 5-1 on those games since he's been back. Sam Darnold has them in a position similar to the other dudes in his division ahead of him to make a run and possibly take over the division. And so that's probably it so far. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's about it that I would say I would move.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, it's time for everyone's favorite segment. I don't know. Maybe not everybody's, but it's our favorite segment for sure. The turnover on downs. All right. First and foremost, we got to start off with TB's trends. All right. Things we're seeing in the league that are happening. And we want to explain what's happening and why. Okay. First up, we're going to go to the Monday night football game. Chargers, Ravens, great game. Harbaugh Bowl. John gets over Jim for the third consecutive time. He's 3-0 in the brotherly battle. First play of the game. Okay. We've seen a lot of teams use these motions with the tight end, right, or the offset back, or the receiver, or whoever, to get a guy in motion to move people in the run game, right? We've talked about that a lot. We showed that with the Falcons earlier this year, creating that extra blocker and with some momentum. So you're going to have essentially what is super counter from the Chargers, right? They're going to motion this tight end offset. They're in the little pair over here, tight end wing. They're going to motion that wing over as the kick out and then pull the backside guard and tackle to get up to both backers and then just block down with everybody else, right? With your other four linemen, because they have the big surface here with all those dudes down. Okay. Now, the Ravens and how a lot of teams are starting to counter this, you're getting a lot of these five-man fronts. It's a 3-4, but we're putting both our outside backers on the line of scrimmage right now. And so it becomes really more like a 5-2 look, and you're dropping that extra safety in and going one high, right? We talked so much about two high, but teams who are wanting to stop this run game, they're going to one high, bringing that safety in. So you almost look like a 5-3, right? And we're going to see, you know, a lot of teams have had success with this, but the Chargers do not on Monday Night Football because the Ravens decide they're gonna you know, bring these extra dudes in the box. All right, so you see the motion, right? He's going to be the kickout man. Boom! Now this dude meets him. Okay, you get the pullers. These D linemen are fighting these down blocks. The pullers struggle to get around because we smoke the kickout, right? And then you see the backers for the Ravens are able to get over the top clean. And that's Trenton Simpson, our guy that we liked coming out of the draft. helping clean it up, right? But here he goes, great angle at it. Okay, they make their adjustment, their boss and bow off that wing or fullback. Okay, they see it, right? They're getting their eyes back, getting over the top, boom, boom, right? It hits, ga-cow. TFL for the Ravens on the first play, establish an attitude that first play of the football game. I love it. So again, the trend, it's always offense, defense is always a game of here's this, here's our counter, here's our counter, right? And yeah. Offenses motion, right? We're gonna motion to create this extra momentum in the run game. Defenses, oh, hey, we see it. We're gonna counter by putting more dudes in the box. We're gonna stop the run on, especially on a first down. And then, you know, maybe later downs, you might be able to get that, but we're betting on it's a later down in distance and you're not getting first downs, right? So it's all about managing the game from both sides. The Ravens did a very good job of that. It's why they're able to win in LA on Monday night.
Yeah, it was just some good defensive play. I thought he was going to try to cut back and then they hit him on the fill from the pull,
mm-hmm.
but was yep. not the case. Next up on the turnover on downs, though, we got my bet for the week. This week, a little different. I couldn't find any that sounded too good to me. So, first off, we got the Bills -6.5 versus San Fran. This is a home game for them, I'm pretty sure. So, San Fran's got to travel to New York and face Josh Allen, newly engaged. So, might be on some, I got to prove some things this week. Watch. At least in my mm-hmm. own mind, that's the narrative I'm creating. We got the Seahawks and the New York Jets -41.5. Geno's been balling. Jets, like we mentioned earlier, not so much. But just could be a weird game all around. Seattle has been up and down, as we mentioned with Geno. So it's like they either focus on the run or he can't really pass. So who knows? But -41.5 sounds good to me. And then Colts Patriots, kind of the reverse. We talked about Anthony Richardson and Drake May being exciting to watch. Could be something where defense somehow gets thrown out the window and they're just lighting up the skies over 42.5. But to me, the safest one of the three is probably the Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills over 6.5 versus the Niners, who have been struggling. Ooh, and if
I don't know if I like it.
Is Brock Purdy back, I guess, would be my next question.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to play.
Mm.
See, the Niners just got embarrassed in Green Bay.
Yeah.
They got embarrassed. I think they're going to respond. That's still a good football team, even with the injuries.
How do you respond?
I don't know that they're going to win, but I feel like they make it close. I don't know. I think my favorite one is your Seattle, New York -41.5. I think you're right. That's gonna be an ugly game.
Yeah,
feels ugly.
I'm not switching. I've been swayed the wrong way before. Now 6.5 with Brock Purdy does seem a lot tougher.
Okay, all right, might be.
Does seem
that's
tougher.
That's on me. All right, I'll take wrong. That.
I thought there was still our guy Braden Allen or whatever his first name is, Brandon Allen. But Brandon. Yeah, some of the B Allen. E Rabbit. No, but yeah, Josh Allen is my
Rabbit.
One I'm rolling with.
Okay. All right. We got the third down breakdown. We're going to go to that Bears Vikings game. All right. Breaking down the Vikings. I said this earlier. We talked about the Vikings, right? This was when the game was 24-16. They've got a 3rd and 12 from midfield. They hit a deep shot to make it a manageable field goal. So it actually put them up 27-16. Which turned out to not be the game-winning field goal because the Bears did force overtime, but it was very close to being that field goal. Fun concept from Kevin O'Connell, right? So the Bears are going to rush 4, right? They get a little bit of an overloaded set over here. They're going to rush 4, isolate their backside pass rusher in a wide 9 on the tackle, and then they're going to play cover 1 robber, right? They're going to play cover 1 up top, man underneath and everything, and then they're going to drop a robber into the dig right into that window that Darnold likely wants to throw for the first down on that 3rd and 12. You're going to play that 12-yard window right in the middle of the field where Darnold likes to throw. Not a bad play call, I think, from the Bears defensively. The only problem here is they end up with a linebacker on TJ Hawkinson, which is a tough matchup. And you're going to see what happens. So the Vikings are going to short motion Hockenson into a bunch. They're going to run the deep over with Jordan Addison, the dig behind it with Justin Jefferson. And then the backside of that, you're going to, out of the bunch, you're going to run the wheel route with Hockenson, which is going to end up coming open. It's a great play call for this, this one robber, just because you do get all that action in the middle of the field, keeps both safeties preoccupied, and you're going to get a true one-on-one outside with the wheel and Hockenson. So here we go. See the short motion, the backers, it's tough for him, right? You can see everything. He's pretty much covered. You can see the safety getting to the middle of the field. You can see the safety that is dropping underneath, right? This safety even stays on that hash. He doesn't get too far over. He's watching Allen's eyes, but look at the backer. Eyes in the backfield. He's getting beat on the wheel route. Boom. Sets it up. Hockenson has a huge gain all the way down to the 15-yard line, about a 35-yard play for the Vikings. Set them up in field goal range. Their protection up front was incredible to give Darnold this time. All right. I mean, it's 5-on-4, and they kept the guy in, so 6-on-4, really. Should give him that kind of time, and it was a big play and what turned out to be a very important game in the playoff race, even though it went to overtime. It was not the game-winning play, but certainly at the time felt like it could have been. So big play for the Vikings. Great play call from Kevin O'Connell. I don't even hate the defensive play call from the Bears, just better execution by the Vikings. Tough matchup. The only complaint I would have had is let's sub that linebacker out and get a nickel guy in to cover Hockenson. Yeah, we might have been in a better spot there. That would be my only qualm with the defense there. I like the play call, didn't like the personnel. Especially for 3rd and 12.
It's tough. Yeah, that's a bad move. I mean, not only that did they have Hockenson on that, but the dude coming across the middle, Justin Jefferson, I think it was. His dude fell or got caught up on something.
His dude fell, but that robber was sitting in the middle of the field. If Darnold had thrown that, was a pick. Yeah.
But yeah. Great ball movement with our guy Donald.
Fourth down. What you got? Fourth
down. Bad beat. So this one, I put on myself. So I did say take Tommy DeVito under 200 yards. And so I opened up Prize Picks Sunday and said, oh, they got a line for him now. It's 174.5. I said,
ooh.
I said, you know what? That's under 200. It's a lot of away from 200, but I said it. I'm going to just take it because I said it myself. You know what I mean? It could be doable. Yeah. The guy got 189 on his passing yards.
So he finished under 200. So you weren't wrong.
I was correct in my analysis of under 200, but in terms of the prop I took, not true. Tough. Which, I mean,
bad beat.
It's all right. I had faith in it. I know, like I said, it's 24 or 26.5 away from, or 25.5 away from the number I put up on my own. But
yeah,
I was wrong and right at the same time.
Well, can't always be 100%. Okay. Great turnover on down segment there. We're finishing the week with the banger of the week. It's my week. And I just want to tell you, so I went to a Texas high school football playoff game last night. Great game, post Sunray, 2A D1 at Lubbock Cooper Liberties. Super nice field. First time I had been there. Went with Jill and a couple of our coaching buddies. And it was cold. We're talking 38 degrees out there. Cold. Benches, I've
been in
cold.
That a minute.
Cold to sit on. But was cold all game long. Great game, back and forth the whole way. Post ended up winning 34-31 and came down to the wire. Came down to a fourth down. You know, Post went for it on fourth down with like 10 seconds left just to like finish the game, seal it. Sunray didn't have any more timeouts. Say what? It was the regional semifinal.
Okay.
So they play all the way through like state. So
okay,
it's you got to win 6 games to get to state. This was game 3.
Oh,
so next week will be the regional final, then the state semifinal, then state. So next week will be like the regional final. Next week will be like the equivalent to CIF was for us.
Gotcha.
Is what it is. So, but unreal game. They had to, it came down to the measurement and they got it. But anyway, I say all this to say, before we went to the game, stopped at Starbucks.
Uh-huh.
Knew it was going to be cold. Got a hot drink. I went with the old school peppermint mocha because it's back seasonally, you know? I mean, it's Christmas season.
Of course.
Still good. Still very good. Peppermint mocha. Great, great coffee. Great hot coffee. I highly recommend. If you haven't had one, get one. No, it's not fruity. It's good. All right.
Are you a big peppermint guy in general?
I do like candy, I do like mint
and all that.
Like, I'm not a huge candy cane guy, but I do like mint. I like peppermint. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes
so banger of the week.
Stay away.
Starbucks peppermint mocha. All right.
I feel it.
But the game is about to be on, so we have to get off so I can go watch the game. Go Blue. Go Blue.
Good luck, bro. We got a tough game for sure. You could play spoiler.
21-point dogs spoiler today. 21-point dogs. We don't care. We're going to get it. Let's go. All right. So we will be back for week 13. Either Thursday night, Friday morning, probably Friday morning.
Probably Friday.
I'm thinking next week.
Yeah.
We'll get this out to you before the game start tomorrow. Mm. And until then, we got our guy. Take us out, Ray Ray. Going on for way too long. System in place is way too wrong. Tell me how you feel if a cop came around, put your son to the ground and he choke him till he can't breathe. Or better yet, break into your house and he shoot you on your couch cause he scared and he couldn't see. Or going on a jog outside and he put that AR to your chest and he fired. Matter of fact, tell me how you feel if your son wore a hoodie when outside got killed. This the main thing I want you to hear. The reason they be killing all my people cause of fear. Cops see a black man shoot him. White man kill 100 people, they subdue them. Freedom. I'ma raise my hand, my fists in the air, I stand my ground like freedom. You can't kill my soul, my brother on the floor can't breathe, let him go like freedom. My brother and sister fighting to be alive. Every day we scream out freedom. Around a cow, one knee, mean two different things. We just wanna be free. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say, it don't matter cause you black. You already guilty, as a matter of fact. Make one move, you ain't never going back to your mom or your daddy. Better yet, please, I beg you to make a move, cause I pull the trigger gladly. Black man down, look, Your Honor, I saw it. I saw him reaching for his 9mm wallet. 38 caliber inhaler in the back seat, so I call for backup when we ran it like a track meet. Had a couple unpaid tickets in the past, so I pulled up on him and I had to shoot his ass. I don't need taser, Glock what I draw. Unless you got a badge, then you're not above the law. System in my favor, black boy, you the opposite. I'll drive you to the station and think about what to charge you with. Speaking to the culture, the community in peril. Got us all thinking like crabs in a barrel. War going on, but we fighting on each other. We cannot afford to be killing all our brothers. We gon' need every single soldier in this battle. About to go left, let me tell you why I have to. Really, it's a trip, this is what I gotta do. So I'ma say it one time and I'm saying it for you. This is for the people looking at me so confused. Wonder why I say and I act the way I do. Why he saying we? Why he talking like he black? Why you talking like you know the struggle, this and that? I swear I hear it all, so I'm finally addressing. I'm white and I'm black, this is my confession. Hate I gotta waste time answering that question. Fists in the air, represent God's blessing. Freedom!